Welcome to the Cold Brew Podcast. I am Dave Gasper, joined as always by Matt Carroll. You know us as the editors at ReviewingTheBrew.com. Lots of stuff going on in Brewers Camp this week. Lots to talk about as we are still away from opening day. But we want to talk prospects on this week's episode. The newest edition of MLB Pipeline's Top 30 Brewers Prospect List dropped this past week. And so we wanted to invite on the author of said Brewers Top 30 list, Sam Dykstra, MLB.com. Welcome. We're happy to have you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
This is one of the top systems in baseball, just with how they've come up these last couple of years. A lot of great prospects, a lot of guys even graduating past couple of years with Bryce Terang and Garrett Mitchell and Sal Frelick and Joey Weimer. But still, the Brewers are one of the top-ranked systems in this league. So this had to be a fun list for you to put together.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the deepest lists to put together. It had some of the best high-ceiling talent. I could write about Jackson Chourio until the cows come home. So getting to write up his list and try to keep it within the word count was a challenge, a good challenge. You could go all the way to like 15, 16, 17 until you start really finding things to critique and be like, all right, this guy might not be much of a dude. When that's happening, it's a sign of a really strong health in a farm system, good depth, good talent. I think we have it at number three right now in our farm system rankings behind the Orioles and the Cubs, but that's a testament to what they built in Milwaukee.
And a lot of that recently has to do with the way they've been drafting, right? I mean, as Brewers fans, you know, maybe in years before this have had mixed feelings about how the Brewers have done in that department, but they've really, it feels like, been able to replenish that system quite well in the last couple years through drafts.
Yeah, and it's not just the big names that they're drafting either. I mean, you look at like Jacob Mizorowski was a second round pick. He was number 63 overall in 2022. Brock Wilken, I think, was a shrewd pick last year in the first round. We're already seeing some of that power he's been able to show this spring, and I'm excited to see, you know, what he can do over a full minor league season or maybe even a major league season. I'm sure we can kind of get to that later. But like drafting Cooper Pratt last year, I know Jim Callis does the draft for us. He was super excited the Brewers were able to get him in the sixth round. He's kind of drawn some Gunnar Henderson comps just from the right side and what Gunnar Henderson was doing at the same time of the year. So like it was really interesting to see them use their draft pool last year and deepen this group, but they've also developed those guys really well. You look at Tyler Black being a draft pick as well, but not a first rounder. They've done a good job of adding talent to the system and then developing from there.
Yeah, I think we were about as excited as Callis was when Cooper Pratt got taken in the sixth round there. I mean, that was huge. I thought he was going to school. I think everyone else thought he was going to school once we got to the sixth round there. But yeah, he's able to sign, and Pat Murphy's got connections with his family. I think that also helps. But yeah, it's definitely been strong drafting. We had Brenton Del Chiaro, the Brewers minor league hitting coordinator, on the pod a couple of months ago. He was just raving about Cooper Pratt and their draft and how they feel like, we feel like we did a really good job in this draft. Like they were very excited with what they got. And, we were excited too. And you got six guys from this year's draft class that are on the top 30 list already just to start this year. I mean, you got Wilken on there. You got Noth. You got Mike Bovee, Cooper Pratt, Eric Bitonti. And you got Bishop Letts in there too. You know, the 11th round pick out of high school, he ends up making the top 30.
Yeah, I mean, this is one thing, and I was going to bring this up as part of the Cooper Pratt discussion, is baseball is so different from the other sports, as everybody I'm sure listening to this knows, and that when you are drafted is not necessarily indicative of your talent level. It's just where they were able to get you, and then maybe they can use some of the pool money to make that work. So Bishop Letts, and you look at him, 11th round pick, and you think, wow, that's pretty late. Like, that's literally mid-rounds. You know, how is he already on the list? He signed for $482,000 and $482,600, I should say, which is like closer to fourth or fifth round money. So, you know, getting him on here, it's a good three pitch mix. It's decent control. He's 6'4". He's only 19 years old. I'm sure he's going to add a little bit more velocity as he goes along. there's a reason why they gave him that much money in the 11th round and were able to make it work. It's kind of incredible how they looked at the puzzle that was their bonus pool, and they were able to add both somebody like Pratt and Letson. They're long-term projects. They're probably going to be in the system for a while, but mm-hmm. and the way they developed other young talents, I mean, that's super exciting.
Yeah, and they had, like, what, $20 left over in their bonus pool? Like, that was it. Like, they stretched every single dollar that they could. All these day three signings came in. I figured they weren't going to get much of any on day three, and they signed nearly everybody. They right. stretched those dollars. All they had left over was maybe enough to buy a pizza to celebrate.
I'm sure they probably had an accountant in the room who was just sitting there furiously typing into a calculator, being like, guys, well, I don't know if this is going to work. But they made it work, and that's the brilliance of the Brewers draft room.
Yeah, but, and oh, go ahead, Matt.
No, I was going to say, just but with all these long-term projects, the Brewers get to dive in that first round and grab, you know, one of the many advanced guys in Brock Wilken. Tons of guys like that who, I mean, you saw like Nolan Schanwell, you know, debut that same year. The first round was stacked for those guys. How fast are Brewers fans going to get to see Brock Wilken in a Brewers uniform?
Yeah, that's one of my big questions of the spring, to be honest with you, because I thought third base was kind of a wide open competition a few months ago, and then they go and trade for Joey Ortiz. So, like, I thought maybe Tyler Black could win that third base job. Now we're seeing Sal Frelick, obviously, at third base, and it seems like they're going to give him actual run there. This is not just a spring experiment. It's a thing they're actually doing. And, you know, Brock Wilken is coming up. There's just, like, so many options that they have at third base now. I think it allows Brock Wilken some development time. I think it's easy to get caught up in the exit velocities. I think it's easy to get caught up in the idea of him hitting 30 homers in a full season. But you kind of want to see that happen in Biloxi and Nashville first before you're really pushing him. And the fact that they have better depth at third base now, I think is going to allow that development to come naturally. And maybe this time next year, we're talking about, like, all right, who's going to seize the third base job if Willy Adames goes elsewhere and Joey Ortiz moves short and Sal Frelick is still playing a little bit of outfield, then I think you could see Brock Wilken come to the fore. I'm not ruling out like August or September for Brock Wilken. I mean, you know, like I said, the exit velocities are crazy. It's not just decent power. He's not just getting it over the fence. He's backing it up with true plus raw pop. But I think he's still going to have prospect status by this time next year.
Yeah, it's a little bit more crowded there on the corners there than it used to be, which is a great problem to have, because that's been an issue for the past several years for the Brewers at first base, at third base. You know, they've drafted a lot of these up the middle guys, which, you know, nothing wrong with that. That makes a lot of sense. Everyone does that. But when you don't have those true corner power guys, you know, that first and third base has been a bit of an issue for this team in recent years. But now, I mean, you got Wilken coming up. Mike Bobie's a corner infielder as well that they got in the draft. Tyler Black can play in some corner infield. Pat Murphy just saying today during spring training that Tyler Black is probably going to play about 4 games at first base, 2 games at third base as part of his weekly routine in AAA to start the year. So it already sounds like he's out of the opening day roster mix. But Tyler Black, you know, maybe if they can move him to first base. Reese Hoskins, I mean, he's only a 1-year solution. But if you can have Brock Wilken at third and, you know, Tyler Black at first, plus you got that mix of Terang and Ortiz and all these other guys in the middle infield, that's the making of a solid infield right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating that Tyler Black might become a first baseman, because I don't think that would happen in many other organizations. Mm-hmm. Not that I love the glove or think he should absolutely be at third base. I think if it were up to me, I would continue to try him a little bit in the outfield because he's a plus runner. I mean, mm-hmm. we saw it with the amount of stolen bases he had last year. But where are the Brewers most loaded? It's in the outfield. Like, there's just not the at-bats.
We're already moving Sal Frelick to the infield for this.
I know, I mean, yeah. Yeah. It's insane. It's an embarrassment of riches on that end. So he just kind of has to play first base. His glove is not, you know, his best tool anyways. So put him over there, and then you get a little bit more of an athletic first baseman. That's not a bad thing either.
Yeah, and joining them on the – infield, I guess, Jefferson Caro at some point still needs to likely get some work in at third base. And Dave knows how much I love catchers in the Brewer system traditionally. A lot of potential. Don't know necessarily that, you know, we've got William Contreras-esque offense in his future, but what type of catcher, like if there were a comp for Jefferson Carroll, for what the Brewers, I know it's tough, but like for what Brewers fans can expect with him at some point alongside Contreras, what type of guy are we looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give away comps because that's just going to push expectations on the guy. I will put it this way. The most enthusiastic defensive reports that I get on catchers in the minor leagues come from Jefferson Carroll. Like, bar none. Not just Brewers, not, you know, like, it's every organization. Carroll is arguably the best defensive catcher in minor league baseball. He can easily catch in the majors right now. He works really well with pitchers. He's silky smooth back there. His arm plays extremely well. You could give it a plus-plus grade, and I wouldn't bat an eye at that. You know, I think even Pat Murphy has called it, like, exceptional this spring. He could definitely play in the majors right now from a defensive point of view. And I think offensively he could be okay, too. He's probably going to be more of a doubles guy than a homer guy. But he could end up being 12, 15 homers, like a 260, 270 average. If he makes, like, two or three All-Star games, it wouldn't surprise me just on the strength of the glove. And he ends up winning five or six. Like, that's a really special catcher. He just also happens to be in a team that quite smartly traded for William Contreras. And I'm really interested to see how that's going to break down when Caro's ready. Luckily for his development, he doesn't need to be pushed to the majors straight away because of Contreras. He can go back to Nashville. But if he leads the International League in caught stealing rate right from the get-go, I wouldn't be shocked by any means.
Yeah, and when we were talking with Brenton Del Chiaro, I mean, he was telling us that there was a time where he thought Carroll was also the best hitter down there in Double A. And, you know, he was having a tremendous season, even with the pre-tagged baseball. But, you know, a doubles guy more than a homers guy, maybe 10, 15 homers hitting for a decently high average. Not to just kind of throw a comp out there, but just one that maybe Brewers fans will understand. Maybe you can agree with, maybe you can disagree with me, Sam. Prime Jonathan Lucroy. You know, he got 53 doubles one year. He hit for, you know, some pretty good averages. Was never a big homers guy, but he got a lot of doubles. And Lucroy was pretty successful for a number of years. Got himself a couple of All-Star appearances.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a good goal for sure. I think that's one thing. There might be some people out there being like, you just said he was so good defensively. Why aren't you using a Yadi Molina comp? And I don't want to set those expectations.
Don't upset Brewers fans. We don't like that guy over here.
I know. Right. Yeah. But don't you want your own Yadi Molina? But still, yeah, I mean, prime Jonathan Lucroy, if he could get to that place and he could get enough at bats to get there, I think that's a great outcome.
So we're officially at the point where we just bounce around the top 30 at this point. I want to know, Jacob Mizorowski, what do you think his future holds? Is it a starter or is it a reliever?
That is the $10 million question. I think there's enough in there to start. But what I'm going to say, and this is actually a comp I stand behind. I think there's a decent chance he becomes a right-handed Josh Hader, which
that's what I've been saying.
On one hand, you're like, that's a reliever. That's not great. On the other hand, we just saw Josh Hader sign a huge contract. There is exceptional value in being an elite reliever in the game now, especially with the way starters are trending and they're less valuable than ever. They're not going 6-7 innings anymore. Some of these guys are going only 5. So I think that's kind of, I don't want to say that's his floor, but that's a pretty good outcome if he becomes a reliever. And I think that's fully within the realm of that happening. I would give him another year at start because he just needs the innings. He needs the experience. Even last year, you know, obviously was taken off down the stretch. So he didn't get those innings that he needs at Double A. I think you trot him out there for 5-6 innings a week. Just try to see if he can find the zone a little bit more. The stuff is incredible, as you guys know. It moves so well that it moves out of the zone. But Double A batters, Triple A batters, and especially Major League batters are going to know that. They're going to spit on 102 because they think it's outside. Like, I don't need to swing at this. Give me something, at least something in the heart of the zone, which Mizorowski can do occasionally as well. So I think there's a chance to be a starter. I don't think he's necessarily going to be an ace if he is a starter because the control is just going to kind of be eh. But if he ends up being a reliever, he could be a closer, no doubt.
Yeah, and the Brewers just seem to be kind of swimming in those kinds of types as well. They tend to develop those quite a bit. But yeah, like I've been saying that too. Like they're determined to develop him as a starter, Mizorowski. They're going to send him out there, and he's probably going to go back to Double A Biloxi and try and get as many innings there as he can. But Josh Hader was a starter in the minor leagues all the way up until they called him up, and then they moved him to the bullpen. And then they're like, "Yeah, he's going to start. He's going to stay out here." They decided to keep him out there, and he just became one of the most dominant closers of all time. Signed the largest reliever contract of all time. So, you know, it could be worse. Hopefully, they can maybe sign an extension before, so they don't have to trade him at the trade deadline and deal with all of that mess. But that's a few years down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it in like 2030 or something like that. That's a fake year. That year doesn't even exist. it's hard to believe we're that's. Anyways, but yeah, Mizorowski, just the stuff. And I remember when Pat Murphy was talking about him, you know, they were like, "Oh, you know, Mizorowski hit 103 in his bullpen today." And Pat Murphy's like, "What is that, his weight?" He's also like, he's 6'7", but he's a skinny dude.
Yeah, he's all limbs. I mean, to watch him. It was really cool to see his kind of coming out party at the Futures game last year. Mm-hmm. Because the amount of comments I got from people of like, has he always been like this? And it's like, well, he's letting it fly because it's a Futures game. He's not going five innings. But on the other hand, yeah, he kind of is. Like, the slider has always been like that. And the velocity has he's at least had that in the tank. So yeah, it's kind of crazy. I called him Slender Man the other day to somebody when we were talking prospects. And I mean that only in physique. I don't mean that scary. It's not a bad nickname. But yeah,
he's scary to hitters.
Kind of incredible.
He's scary to them.
He's scary to hitters. Yeah. Yeah. He's a nightmare to hitters. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy that he's able to show that velocity given how slender he is. But like, you know, it's just a true testament to him.
Yeah. Give this guy some chicken and rice. Sorry, go ahead, man.
And this is another guy who, you know, has, you know, control in a certain area that the Brewers are really working to try and harness. You look at Abner Uribe when he was at those lower levels. There were tons of questions about whether he would ever be able to rein that in, but it was known that if he did, that was a dangerous guy. And then look at what ends up happening. He works his way up. He ends up debuting for the Brewers last year and being extremely effective at the back end of the bullpen. How is it that the Brewers are able to do this? I mean, you wouldn't think that control, quote unquote, would be something that you could necessarily teach.
You kind of can. I'm not saying like it's easily teachable by any means. I think it's easier to teach control and command than it is velocity. Like teach, if everybody could throw 102 like Abner Uribe, then everybody would. These guys just have that natural ability, and the Brewers clearly prefer, and not in all cases, you have your Carlos Rodriguez's and your Robert Gassers who are not exceptional velo, but have pretty good control, but they prefer guys with like this max stuff. And then we can harness it in. Then we can work on mechanics. I can't add 5 miles an hour to your fastball like that, but over time, we can kind of find that zone a little bit more. Uribe is a perfect example because he just needed the innings. That's one thing they always said. He just needed experience. You look at how many injuries he had. Some of them were freak, you know, like I think it was a torn ACL.
Meniscus tear.
That's not an arm issue. So that it kept him from pitching innings. And he just got those innings at the perfect time for him to make the major leagues. Mizorowski needs that too. And I think that's what's going to come in bulk this year. And we can kind of reevaluate that starter versus reliever conversation maybe in the second half once he gets those innings.
Yeah, you know, that was the issue for me too. You know, I topped out at 78. They couldn't teach me velocity. Like if I could throw 95, you know, that would have been great. I could have all the command and control in the world that I wanted. But if I'm topping out at 78, I'm not going anywhere. So, when you can just top out at 102, they'll bring you in and they'll figure out a way to harness it so you don't kill somebody. But, yeah, Uribe and Mizorowski and just now they got Trevor McGill in there too. I know he's not a prospect, but he throws 100 miles an hour. And, like, it's some power arms back there in that bullpen. But enough about these guys. You know, let's talk about the guy everyone – wants to talk about when it comes to the Brewers farm system, and that is Jackson Churio. He signed the largest contract extension of any player in history prior to making his MLB debut. 8 years, $82 million, plus another couple of option years. Incredibly smart move by the Brewers, so that we don't have to have that conversation in 5 years about how are we going to trade him. We don't have to deal with the service time considerations, none of that. He's signed. He's going to be in Milwaukee long term. And just with all the hype that's been around Jackson Chourio and just what everyone's looking for from him, what do you think are some realistic expectations for him? You know, because the hype is the moon right now. It is all the way up there. What are some realistic expectations for Chourio this season?
Yeah, I'm glad you said this season, because I think that's a big part of it. He just turned 20 this week. Mm-hmm. And that's insane that we're talking
about. Happy birthday, Jackson, by the way.
Happy birthday, Jackson Chourio. Yeah, if you are out there listening, happy birthday to you. But yeah, March 11th, just turned 20 years old. Most of his cohorts, we're talking about being in high A right now. Or if they're American, they're still in college. You have to look at what he did last year at Biloxi. And I know you mentioned before, like the pre-tax ball that might have affected him in the first half with Biloxi. I tried to ask as many people as I could that question of like, do you think that hurt him? And they were still trying to gather information, but he's still a 19-year-old at Double A. I think he's another guy who just needs to see quality of pitching. And he, as you saw in July last year, he really caught up to the level of the league. The tools are always going to be there. I think that's the great thing about Chourio, is that you stick him in center field, he's going to provide value out there. You get him on the base paths, he's going to steal 30, 40 bags in the major leagues, so long as he gets on base a decent amount. So he's always going to provide some value. He's going to hit the ball hard when he makes contact. If he bats something like 240, 250 this year with 17 homers, some people might look at that as like a disappointment. I think that's incredible. Like, that's for a 20-year-old. That's really valuable. And you look at some of the other options around him, they just kind of need him to be a good number eight hitter, maybe. He can grow into that number three. He could kind of follow that path that we've been seeing the last few years of like Bobby Witt Jr. took off in year two. It's pretty good in year one, really good in year two. That's where I think the emphasis needs to be on Jackson Chourio, but he needs to get those major league at-bats. That's going to come this season. And if he ends up being a 2-3 win player because of the defense and the speed, that's a great start.
And that puts him in, you know, that kind of tricky position where he's here, he's now. He didn't get the chance to, you know, spend that time developing in the minors. He shot through the system, got the contract, and I think expectations are that he's going to be here on opening day. He's certainly performed, you know, well enough in the spring, but as he's, you know, trying to walk that fine line in his first year, his rookie year of learning the majors and also still trying to improve, because to your point, he's still only 20. There's been so much talk about the things he does well. He's a little strikeout heavy yet, but what are the things that you'd like to see him kind of work on in his first year while he's also trying to balance that with, you know, the expectations and first year in the big leagues and all these different things?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, don't get too swing heavy. You know, really hone in on your zone, because the contact's going to be there. And every time I talk to somebody about Chourio, it's always, can you believe he hits the ball the other way as well as he does? Like, he will hit opposite field homers. Like, it's no problem. But he just needs to make sure that he's not forcing things. And I think that's going to come down to seeing major league pitching, being able to adjust, knowing how they're pitching to you, because he does make those adjustments long term. He just needs to see the quality of pitching to begin with. So I think he might, there's always that concern of players this young and now players with this type of contract that you're going to feel like you need to justify it from day one. I think the Brewers are trying to kind of protect him from that and say, just go out there and be Jackson, do everything you've done so far. But I think that's something that they're going to have to really focus on. Like, hey, don't chase sliders down and away like you have before. That's how they're going to try to get you. Look for drivable pitches, because we know your power is going to play. So we'll see how that goes early on. Hopefully they can protect him in that way. And like I said, if they keep him lower in the lineup, that alleviates some of that pressure. But that's one thing I'm going to be clued in on is what is his approach and how swing happy does he get?
Minor side note here, Sam, do you do the list for either the Padres or the White Sox?
Padres, I do, yes.
Well, the Padres are now getting Dylan Cease.
Ooh, so are they really?
That is just happening. Jeff Passan, John Heyman, everyone breaking that. That's going on right now. So Dylan Cease is now a San Diego Padre. So you may have some new names to add to your top 30 list over there in San Diego. But yeah, that's news that's going on right now as we're recording here. But back to Jackson Churio, just with what he's done and looking at his numbers last year, just the splits and how the timing of his breakout in the middle of the season coincided with the end of the pre-tacked baseball. It's like, this seems like it was pretty much a thing that was having issues. Maybe they don't want to admit it down there, but offense really across the league, down in the Southern League, seemed to be down in that first half of the pre-tech baseball, and pitchers would have their spin rates were going up. Carlos Rodriguez, his spin rates were going crazy. A lot of pitchers down there, spin rates are stuff. Everything was ticking up. Offense was down, and then they get rid of the pre-tech baseball, and Churio just goes off.
Yeah, I tried to ask around about that, and I think it was just a combination of things. I think it was the fact that he had multiple months of seeing that quality of pitching, and he adjusted to the level more than the ball. I'm not going to discount it by any means. Like, I think one thing that he's had to adjust to is breaking pitches. And if pitches were breaking harder than ever, then that was to his disadvantage. But it's funny you mentioned Carlos Rodriguez, because I remember talking to him in Biloxi last year. And yeah, his curveball and slider might have been acting a little bit differently, but his best pitch is his changeup. And that is something you don't want to have a ton of spin on. So he said that was an adjustment to using the pre-tack ball. It was like, how do I still kill spin on this if it's still sticking to my fingers a little bit? It's an interesting experiment. I don't know if we'll see it again. I haven't heard anything on that front yet. But I think that you can't just say it was the ball alone that helped Jackson Churio take off in the second half. I think there were a lot of different factors at play there.
Yeah, you don't want spin on that changeup unless you're Devin Williams. Then you can just
spin on. If you could beat Devin Williams, be Devin Williams. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Right.
I think that even speaks again, even more highly to Carroll and what he was able to do down there in Double A, because he was one of the few hitters that actually didn't struggle horribly at the beginning of the year when they had that pre-tack baseball.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point too. That one thing I think people don't talk about enough is, especially in the lower levels, you'll see catchers have really strong walk rates. And that's because I think they have better eyes than anybody else for an obvious reason. They see pitches more than any other position player because their defensive position is to watch the ball move. So I'm sure Caro, being a catcher, having seen what the pre-tack baseball could do more than his fellow Shuckers hitters, was to some advantage for him. So I'm not entirely surprised by that. Mm-hmm. It's certainly a credit to him that his numbers weren't slumping in the first half.
So I want to move on now to another one of these international outfielders. The Brewers have just seemingly been having very strong international markets, international signing periods in recent years. And Luis Lara he seems to have followed the Jackson Churio track, where he has a really good DSL season, completely skips the Arizona Complex League, goes right to low A, and then just dominates. And Luis Lara, he put up some really great numbers there down in Carolina, hitting .285, .379 on base percentage, 22 stolen bases, and then getting the promotion to high A. I know he doesn't have the power profile that Churio does, but can Luis Lara be the next guy to make this kind of jump in prospect status as a hitter?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question, is how much impact is he going to have when he makes contact? Because it is a good amount of contact. His OBP was certainly high. I think you've seen Pat Murphy talk about this spring of like, he wants Lara to play as much outfield as he can get because he's a really good outfielder. So the other pieces are there, but if he's swinging, essentially a spaghetti noodle, like it's tough to project him. Like once he gets to Double A and Triple A, that slugging percentage could take another hit. And that's difficult to play those guys. Those are much more likely to be fourth, fifth outfield types. But he's still young. I mean, that's the incredible thing, right? Like, you always have to kind of keep it in context. And the fact that he did completely skip a level stateside and was thrown into the deep end and held his own is a strong sign. He's not as big as Churio. He's only 5'7". I don't think he's going to magically add 5 inches of height, even as he matures a little bit. So that hurts his power projection a little bit. But, you know, like you said, it's kind of funny that they've got Churio, who started this track. Lara has followed him. And I feel like Yoffery Rodriguez is going to follow him next. So the fact that they could have three outfielders do that same path is really, really interesting.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, asking about Yoffery Rodriguez, who could come up behind him and do that same kind of thing this next year. But he has a little bit more power to him. 6'1", you know, bigger size, left-handed bat, and already had 6 home runs last year. But also, this was also key, more walks than strikeouts, 41 walks, 40 strikeouts. That also, especially at such a young level, is such a good indicator for what that bat is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great sign, and I don't want to discount it by any means. The only thing I will say is the DSL can be rough on the pitching side.
Yeah.
You get a lot of these 17, 18, 19-year-old pitchers who don't know where the ball is going all the time. That being said, there are a lot of hitters who are swinging at everything at that level. So the fact that Rodriguez wasn't necessarily that is a strong sign. I think he could be an above-average hitter in time. He is left-handed. That's great. More likely to go to a corner than Churio or Lara are, and that dings him a little bit. And the only reason – you know, you look at like what his scouting grades are, it's above average hit, it's above average power. There's some speed there too. The only reason why he's number 11 is we haven't seen it stateside yet, but I think that's going to come. I think there's a decent chance we look up and he's in Carolina by May. And then we can really evaluate him in the similar ways that we did Churio and Lara.
With Lara, can the Brewers get us a picture of him standing next to Mizorowski at some point here? 5'7" versus 6'7". I got to see it. Just at some point. But you name a couple of outfielders on the Brewers top 30. After that, like, we've been so used to the Brewers having this huge, huge outfield depth, but most of those guys are now graduated and Churio will be, you know, after not too long. You look past those two guys, you know, Dylan O'Rey, you know, got some work in the outfield. Pedro Ibargan, you know, kind of starting to get the work there too. But like, that's really all you see now for outfielders on the top 30, which is kind of weird. What are some of maybe like the next wave? Some of the guys that like, you know, could start working their way up that, you know, maybe could provide a little bit of extra depth there in the outfield. Just knowing that that's a position that the Brewers generally try to prioritize in their system.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really interested in O'Rey. Kind of in the similar ways that I am about Lara. He did start in the ACL last year coming out of Canada. They really liked the pick. They thought the entire industry was sleeping on Dylan O'Rey, and he's extremely athletic, and that's why they're playing him at second in the center field. The arm is a big question. He's not going to like move over to third base or be an option in right, but he's really, really fast. He's going to steal a lot of bases. He has a pretty good approach. It's just very little power. It's basically bottom of the scale power right now. Maybe you hope he gets to a 30 at some point. But he kind of fits that mold of what they look for, which is just really athletic guys who they can stick up the middle. And hey, if you look up at some point and you happen to have three center fielders, which they were dreaming on last year with Joey Weimer, Garrett Mitchell, and Sal Frelick, that's a good problem to have. And then you sort it around later. So Array's kind of that next guy. You mentioned Ibargüen. Like, interesting mix for me. He's got an above average arm. That might be the best thing for him, but they were putting him in that class with Rodriguez of like, hey, we want him coming over to Arizona early, just to see how he can handle that. And we want him kind of working with our development team early in the spring. I don't think he's going to necessarily get to Carolina by May, like I was saying with Rodriguez, but certainly performed well in the DSL last year. And hey, look, if the Brewers get to a point where Churio is graduated and Rodriguez and Lara are in the top 10, but it's not many outfielders beyond them. They're still set at the major league level for a long time. Yeah. And the draft is coming up again. And, you know, one thing we haven't really mentioned yet is they trade pretty well too. So if they do make any deals for like Willie Adames, you could probably bet that they would address the outfield in that way as well. So I'm not entirely worried about the lack of depth beyond the big names because the big names are really, really good.
Yeah, man, they've been stacking them there at that position the past couple of years. They haven't drafted a single outfielder in the last 2 years, in the last two drafts, and they haven't really needed to. So, I mean, they can look at those international guys to kind of fill the lower levels of the farm system, and, you know, they can be just fine in the outfield. And when you have Yelich still for another 5 years, you have Churio now for the next eight, plus you got a combination of Frelick and Mitchell and Weimer around there. You got plenty of options at that spot. And, you know, now they're just kind of loaded in the infield. And previously infield, you know, wasn't really the spot, but that's where you got Tyler Black and Brock Wilkin now and Mike Bovey and Eric Patanti. But also they got Joey Ortiz here too. And when we're like looking at Joey Ortiz's write-ups when he first got, you know, traded over, it felt like a similar profile to Bryce Terang, didn't it? Like where it's a very strong glove, you know, a solid hit tool, maybe not as much power. But do you think they have somewhat similar profiles or what can Brewers fans expect out of Joey Ortiz?
I think Joey Ortiz, and I really like Bryce Terang. I think Bryce Terang is a better overall athlete. But I think Joey Ortiz's actions, his instincts in the middle infield, I would like to see him at short and Terang at second, because I think he makes all the right moves at short and he certainly covers a lot of ground. I think Ortiz has more power than Terang does. Mm-hmm. The thing, if you look at him last year from AAA, his exit velocities were pretty good. He just hit the ball on the ground a ton. And kind of going back to like what we were saying before about velo versus control, raw power versus in-game power, I think you could teach him to elevate a little bit better. I think you can teach him to like get in front of the ball, try to hit it on its head a little bit more. It's the strength that can be like the, if he had average X velocities like at 88 miles an hour, I'd be really concerned at AAA. It's above that. So I don't know. He's on the older side. I like his chances a little bit more than what we've seen out of Terang. That being said, Terang is super athletic. He shows a pretty good eye. It's just such a fascinating, like, I wish he would be showing more power. Maybe that's going to be coming this year. I just think they're a little bit different in that aspect, in the power aspect.
Yeah, Pat Murphy said he thinks Terang is going to make a quantum leap this year, as he named him his opening day second baseman. And I mean, like, we can see it happen. Like you mentioned before, Bobby Witt Jr., you know, not a great year one, but year two, fantastic. And he turned that into a massive contract this offseason. But I mean, we saw that with a lot of the Brewers, you know, the freshmen, as they called them last year, with Terang and Mitchell and Frelick and Weimer. We saw them largely struggle. Mitchell and Frelick dealt with injuries, and then Terang and Weimer, you know, they really struggled to get going at the plate. But does it feel like to you that they can have a big leap in year two, or which guys do you think are most primed to have a very strong sophomore year?
Yeah, I think Frelick is probably at the top of the list for me, just because I've always trusted his hit tool. And I think that's the toughest thing to teach. It's always been really good. He's always had a strong eye. Now he's had those major league at bats and he knows how to adjust, but he's just a really good athlete. That's why they're moving him to third base. I mean, it's not because they don't think he can play outfield. It's because, and I don't say this lightly, they kind of have him in that Mookie Betts slot. Mm-hmm. The reason why Mookie Betts is moving from right field to second to short is because he's mostly the most athletic person on every field he touches. Shohei Ohtani might have something to say about that now, but neither here nor there. But that it's not out of question of like, oh, we don't think he can play defense. It's because we think he can really play defense and we want him at multiple spots. So I think Sal Frelick adding that defensive versatility is going to be huge for him on top of the hit tool. I still believe in Joey Weimer. I was actually surprised to see how good of a defender he was in center field last year. The power's always been there. It's crazy to see where his swing has gotten since when he was first drafted. I used to compare him to being the human tornado at the plate. Like, if he got contact, it was going a far way, but boy, was there a lot going on in his stance. And now everything's cleaned up a little bit. It's a little bit more in control. You know, again, he's seen the majors, so hopefully he can make that adjustment. But at least the floor is good, because we know the speed, the range, the arm are going to play in the outfield. And I really hope Garrett Mitchell just stays healthy. Like, mm-hmm. he is the fastest guy on most fields himself. He just needs to be out there. I think he's the perfect fourth outfielder for a contender, which is what the Brewers ought to be, especially in this NL Central.
Looking at the starting rotation now, you're going to have kind of another situation, actually. We're going to have a wave of young guys who are going to have to kind of come in and, you know, be that next group. You know, Corbin Burnes has already moved on. Woodruff, it was great to see him back, but he will likely only be here for so long. At some point, Father Time will catch up to Wade Miley. We don't know when that'll be. So in a group of three guys, we're looking at, you know, Robert Gasser and Carlos Rodriguez being the two kind of starters at the top of the list. And I'm going to throw DL Hall in here too. He's not that far removed from prospect status and was a pretty high prospect for the Orioles when they had him. Of those three, who can Brewers fans expect to be the guy that makes it the farthest up the rotation, let's put it?
Ooh, that's a good question, because the balance for me is DL Hall has the best stuff of that group. DL Hall, I don't want to say he's like the left-handed Mizrowski, but like for years in the Orioles system, it was, all right, we all feel he's probably going to end up as a reliever, but we're going to keep him as a starter for as long as we can. And now the Brewers go out and trade for him, and then they're like, hey, we want that now. Like, we want DL Hall the starter. I just don't think there's enough control in there for me to comfortably say like he's going to be a starting pitcher. He could be a really good eighth inning guy. So I think that's probably where he's going to end up. We'll see how it goes, if he's going to have enough control. Gasser does have control. I really like his slider. Both him and Carlos Rodriguez, these aren't guys with stellar velocity by any means, but they understand their pitch mix really well. I think Robert Gasser pretty comfortably is going to be at least a number five starter. Like, I don't see a world in which Robert Gasser goes to the bullpen. He doesn't need it. The stuff plays, he led AAA in strikeouts, I believe, last season, based off that sweeper. He's got the cutter that he talked to me about, that like, if he just needs to bullet a pitch to a spot and get strike one, that's what he has the cutter for. The pitch profiles play in all sorts of different directions. The changeup needs to improve, and he's talked about that, or he needs to have better command of it. But the profile of it, the movement profile of it, is actually really, really good itself. So if he can command it just a little bit better, he's going to have four really strong pitches. And the space between his ceiling and his floor is very small. It's like, I think at his ceiling, he's a number four, and at his floor, he's a number five. But that's a starting pitcher. That's more than you can say about many, many prospects. And that's why, you know, I slotted him where I did on the list, which was number six, ahead of Brock Wilkin, because starting pitchers are as valuable as they ever have, because so many guys are moving to the bullpen. Brock Wilkin, as good as he was last year, still slightly unproven in pro ball. At least we have the body of work with Gasser. And I fully expect him to be an option for the Brewers in the first half. And once he gets up there, I think he's certainly capable of sticking. Carlos Rodriguez, more of a kitchen sink approach. He talked to me about it. Like, I have a pitch that's 92, 88, 85, 81, 78. So you got to think about five different velo bands from me, and I'm just going to constantly keep you guessing. So you're not going to see like 95 and be like, whoa, look, you know, he's blowing it by, guys. But you're going to look up, and he's going to have five innings and two earned runs allowed with six strikeouts. That's just going to happen. And again, I think the floor is maybe as a number five. The ceiling's not much higher than that. But Gasser has the AAA experience that Rodriguez lacks.
Yeah, and just being able to get some of those guys, the opportunities are certainly there in that rotation. I don't think Jacob Junis and Colin Ray are going to hold these guys off of rotation spots for very long. You know, certainly not blocking them by any means. But yeah, if they can just get the innings necessary, they're going to be interesting guys. Another guy that I kind of like for this future rotation, he's a little bit further away though, Logan Henderson. You know, the Brewers love their JUCO arms, and Henderson was one of those guys. 2021. Fourth round pick. And, you know, he struggled with an injury at the start, but last year in Carolina, 2.75 ERA in 18 starts. You know, Henderson, it feels like a guy that I feel like he could pop off and really move up some of these prospects list once he gets some experience at the higher levels.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember having some conversations this offseason, and it seems like a lot of Brewers evaluators have him circled as, like, he's the guy who will be rising up rankings if all goes well and he can stay healthy this year. He already has elbow surgery on the ledger, but, like, the changeup is the best in the system, and I really like Carlos Rodriguez's changeup. Logan Henderson's is really special. I put a 65 grade on it. You could go plus-plus easily on it. There's not necessarily the breaking ball. So that's my concern, is that sometimes you see, especially at single A, high A, even double A, guys with really, really good changeups can dominate, but by the time they make the major leagues, it's not quite as effective. You look at somebody like Gavin Stone with the Dodgers for that. But Henderson, all he needs to do is pitch. He just needs to get to 100 innings in a season. We haven't seen out of him yet. He got 78 and two-thirds last year, struck out 106 and had really good control. So if he continues those rates of keeping the walks down, the strikeouts high, ERA in that, you know, three area, yeah, we could be looking at him as a top 12 prospect in this system and somebody really about to take off. And I think once you have that changeup and you can focus on the breaking ball, that's huge. And he's already got such a good foundation on him.
So then, similar question for the offensive side of the ball. Who is one of those guys that you could see by, you know, mid-season, late season, making that rise that maybe fans didn't expect? Maybe perhaps like a, you know, like a Luke Adams from last year. I think people saw, you know, some potential in him. I don't know that I saw him rising quite as far as he ended up rising when all was said and done. Who ends up being that kind of for 2024?
Yeah, I'm really interested in Juan Baez. He was at number 24 in our list. You look at what he did in the Arizona Complex League last year, batted 370 over 48 games, got up to Carolina at the end of the year. He doesn't necessarily have any of the true plus tools that really scream to you of like, oh, like Logan Henderson's changeup. He doesn't really have that in him. He has a really big leg kick, but he makes a lot of contact, only struck out 11.2% of the time last year, which was lowest among the ACL. If you already have that contact rate, that's a special place to start. And even if that gets to the 15 range, that's going to be good for single A. So I'm going to be keeping a close eye on him. He is still fairly young. He's only 18 years old. He's turning 19 on June 27th. So even then, he's kind of young for his signing class. And I think he could pop off. I'm not saying he's going to hit 370 again for Carolina, but if he's hitting 310, 320 and still playing an okay infield, like that, he could move 5-6 spots on this list.
Yeah. And, you know, just kind of speaking of moving up lists, you know, last year we saw guys like Jefferson Caro and Tyler Black just push their way up into the top 100. And the Brewers do have several top 100 prospects on your list. Who are the guys that this year do you think can make the jump up into the top 100? Can Wilkin make the jump into the top 100? Carlos Rodriguez, Luis Lara, maybe Cooper Pratt. Who do you see as possibly guys who could crack that top 100 during this season?
Yeah, I mean, and this goes back to what we were saying at the top of the show. Like, I think anybody in the top 11 could join the top 100 this season. I think that group from 6 to 11 is much closer than a ranking would make you think. You know, Gasser, we got some feedback in the offseason that he deserved to be on the top 100 now. That's why he's at number 6. I think if Wilkin goes to Biloxi, and like I said, it's 15 homers in the first 2 months, we're going to have to consider him because the power is playing as well there as it did in college. Luis Lara, if he adds just a little bit of power, if he gets that up to a 40 instead of a 30, you look at the other tools, it's tough to keep him off the list. Cooper Pratt, like I said, like Gunnar Henderson, if he does live up to those comps, got onto the top 100 fairly quickly. So that could certainly work. Yoffrey Rodriguez, again, I think he has the better all-around package maybe than Luis Lara. It just doesn't have the experience, but that's going to come pretty quick. So anybody in this top 11 could join that at some point. It's probably going to come at the same time as some graduations, which is unfortunate depending on how you look at it, but that's what the Brewers do. If somebody graduates off the list, there's somebody else popping up to fill the void, and they continually the last couple of years have been in the upper reaches of our farm system rankings.
Yeah, and even with all the graduations, you know, last year, it's still a top three farm system, and you still have all these top 100 prospects, even after Terang and Mitchell and Frelick and Weimer all graduate off the list. And speaking of graduations, I mean, there are going to be a bunch of them this year. Churio, we're going to see graduate. Ortiz is going to graduate. Gasser most likely going to graduate at some point. Black probably. You know, Caro's on the 40 man. I don't know how much we're going to see him this year, but who are the guys that you think when we get to next year, because Churio's going to be graduating this year, when we get to 2025 and you're putting your 2025 Brewers list together, who do you think your candidates are going to be that number one guy?
I think, you know, unless something really crazy happens with Jacob Mizorowski, and it could just based off the stuff, they could push him, but I think it's more likely that he's going to get kind of an August or September call up and just cling on to this list, which would probably make him the number one prospect unless something happens health-wise. Brock Wilkin, same kind of deal that we were saying before. See him splitting the year between double A, triple A. Optimistically, maybe he gets a call at the end of the year, but still retains prospect eligibility. You know, Luis Lara isn't going to be graduating anytime soon. Cooper Pratt's not going to be graduating anytime soon. Rodriguez, you know, Eric Brown Jr. is not going to be graduating this year, I don't think. It could still be a strong five or six. It's just, it's going to be difficult to reach this height again, I think, unless something unexpected happens. And listen, if we had the same conversation 2 years ago, I'd be saying nice things about Jackson Churio. I wouldn't be saying he was going to be a future number two overall prospect, and yet here we are.
So then taking Churio and Mizorowski out of the equation, what Brewers prospect are you most excited to watch this year?
I do think it is Brock Wilkin for me. I'm really interested to see how that power is going to translate. I think the power is going to translate. It's just like, how is he going to make enough contact to make that work? Because if he is in the minors for a full season, like he could challenge for the minor league home run lead, I think, which would be really, really cool to follow. And it would just add to the embarrassment of riches for the Brewers. So like we saw some good things out of him in college. What is that next step for him? I'm going to be fascinated to see. And again, like Luis Lara, I really enjoy watching him play. I love how much contact he makes. It's just that big question of the power. So I'll be keeping a very close eye on him.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see what Wilkin can do this year. I was so excited they finally got a power hitting corner guy. The draft when they finally draft him, it's all these up the middle guys without much power, and finally a big boomer, someone that can make Bernie Brewer actually worry about the dents in his slide someday. But yeah, I mean with all these guys, you know, talking about them too, who could be graduating this year, and guys moving into top 100, but also guys that are going to have to move on to the list, you know, onto the top 30 list. I mean, as we were talking about before, this is a very deep system. I'm assuming you had to make some very difficult choices to narrow it down to 30. Who were some of the guys that just missed the list for you, and that maybe we could see moving up into the top 30 once some of these graduations hit and once minor league season gets rolling?
Yeah, one that got pushed a lot was Gregory Berrios, a shortstop, who hasn't hit much. And that's why I'm keeping him off for now. But they really like his defense at shortstop. And when you are that athletic, like the bat can catch up to the glove at some point. So that's what they're hoping. They think strength is going to be added as he matures a little bit more. You'll see a little bit more impact. I just want to see it happen first. But Berrios was somebody who just missed the list for us. Jesus Made, who's a shortstop in their international class this year. Ryan Burchard, who was a right-handed pitcher in their draft from last year. I want to see him perform a little bit more in pro ball, but I could easily see him jumping in maybe to the top 20 by the time we do our midseason update. He just needs that pro experience. But, yeah, a couple guys there that just missed our list. And once we get some of these graduations, could easily pop up on the list very soon.
Yeah, another one of the guys I was thinking about too was Matthew Wood, fourth round pick a couple years ago. Yeah, he had some pretty solid numbers, but I'm excited to see what Wood can do.
Yeah, he was just so inconsistent with the bat that he kind of got pushed.
I think
off
he had some injuries too. Yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't. He's not good enough with a glove just to be like, well, he's a catcher. He doesn't need to hit a lot. Like, that's fair enough, but he could easily take off a little bit more in year two. It just wasn't quite as consistent as I would have liked offensively.
Ryan Burchard could make the top 30 another community college pitcher. That's shocking.
Can you believe it? I know. My goodness.
The Brewers love their JUCO guys. Like we've kind of like figured out a system. Like they, like every single year they're taking one of these JUCO arms, whoever the top JUCO arm is, they're probably targeting him. Like whenever you guys do your mock drafts, just pencil in one of these JUCO arms to the Brewers, because like they always hit one of them.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. If we did our mock drafts five rounds deep, I'm sure we could find a spot for a JUCO arm to go to the Brewers, but I'll pass that along to Jim and Jonathan. They do our draft stuff. They do it really well. But yeah, there's not much that's more consistent. Maybe the Red Sox taking a high school bat out of California, although they didn't do that this year, but they did that like 3 or 4 years in a row. But the Brewers taking a JUCO arm, you put it in pen now. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Put him in the pitching lab. Next thing you know, they're just going to be a stud that's just out there lighting guys up, either in the bullpen or whatever it is. It's just how they.
You think other teams would catch on to this by now?
You'd think, yeah. It's like, maybe we should hit these JUCO guys. You know, Aaron Ashby coming out of nowhere, Jacob Mizrowski. You know, maybe we should hit up Crowder in Missouri or something like that. But, yeah, they always get them, and it's just like, all right, like now I'm catching myself like looking up JUCO stats throughout the season. I'm just like, what am I doing with my life? I'm looking up JUCO stats. I'm like, what are
this
these
is all
guys?
A big JUCO conspiracy to get the great people of Wisconsin interested in junior college baseball to just get the Brewers to draft all the good ones.
Oh yeah, someone's got to. Sam Dykstra of MLB. Is there any other guy on this list, on this top 30 in this Brewer system that we didn't talk about that you want to mention? A guy that you like, a guy that maybe Brewers fans should be taking a closer look at?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't talk about Eric Brown Jr. Too much. I think I may have mentioned him briefly in passing. I'm really interested to see what's going to happen for him this year, because he just had so many freak injuries last year. And then I saw him in the fall league. He looked pretty good in the fall league. It was interesting to watch him hit, because he just looked like he was sitting back so much, really focusing on elevating the ball, getting it up in the air. I'm interested to see what can happen in year two for him. I just want him to play 110 games. I think he's going to be fast enough. I think he plays a really good shortstop. Can he get the power to play a little bit more? Because if he does, by the end of the year, then we're talking about, well, what did the Brewers do with Eric Brown Jr.? Where does he play? You got to get that Tyler Black problem, which is a good problem to have. So I don't want anybody to think like it was a lost year for him. It was in some ways. You kind of put it in the past. But I think something good could be coming from Eric Brown Jr. this season.
Yeah, even in 72 games, he stole 39 bases. The speed plays there. If you can just get healthy for the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Eric Brown, super excited to see what he can do this year and what the Brewers got. Sam Dykstra of MLB.com. We'll let you get to working on the new guys you have to put into your Padres list once that trade officially gets announced. Oh, it looks like we got Drew Thorpe and Jairo Iriarte heading to the White Sox in the Dylan Cease trade. So that's a...
They did not hold on to Drew Thorpe for very long, I guess.
No. They just got him for Soto, didn't they? Like,
Yes. And he talked about somebody with a really good changeup. We were talking about with Logan Henderson. Drew Thorpe is, it might be an 80 changeup. It's really, really good. So that's fascinating. But yeah, I got to start typing up some replacements.
Yeah. All right. We'll let you get to that. Sam, we appreciate you hopping on with us and talking some Brewers prospects. And hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
All right. That'll do it for us on this week's Cold Brew podcast. Be sure to check us out on Spotify and follow all of us on Twitter. Follow Sam at Sam Dykstra, MILB, I want to say. And follow me. I'm at DGasper24. Matt is at MKEMatt13. And thank you for listening. This has been the Cold Brew Podcast.